Okay. It's Bernie Von Trapp. And the fact that both of them were from the same area, from Salzburg, gave them a real strong common history and traditions. So when we grew up, we didn't have Santa Claus. We didn't have various holidays that were, they were noticed and recognized, but they were not, the emphasis was not put on them like those traditional ones were. And that slowly subsided as the years went by. They were more for when we were children, growing up, that those traditions were really adhered to.
And say, just take Christmas. How would you celebrate?
Christmas had nothing to do with Santa Claus. The 6th of December was St. Nicholas Day. And I remember spending Christmas in Austria when I was, I think, three. I was three or even maybe less. And I remember St. Nicholas coming. I mean, it was a horrifying. I told people about it, and they just, that's ridiculous, you know, they'll say, because along with St. Nicholas comes Krampus, which is the devil. And he is there to take you away if you haven't been a good boy or girl. And I recall, I don't know how, what impressed me as a little kid at that point was my grandmother's house was a three-level house, townhouse. There was a balcony on the second level, and those were the living quarters. And they were high. I mean, when you're a little kid, it's higher yet, but you entered into the lower level and came up the stairs. And my grandmother just barely got the door closed before the Grumpus was beating his willow, you know, switches, you know, a big bundle of them tied together. I can remember looking out the window with one of my, either my sister or brother, and somehow this Grumpus had gotten high enough so he could hit the window. And I thought, you know, this guy's got some magic. He can just stretch up and hit the window. But those were the kind of things that would really impress you as a kid. And so the 6th of December was St. Nicholas Day. And he would come and always bring mostly nuts and fruit and things like that. They were pretty healthy, you think about it. Okay, and so Christmas was the Christ child and the angels. And the angels brought all the presents and everything else. And it was very, in a child's understandable for a child. It was all based around the Christ child and on a more of a religious slant.
And that was here. You practiced that here.
Oh, so yeah, absolutely.
Would St. Nicholas come here or
only in? Oh, they would have some friend or the pastor or whatever. He'd walk up the road, and some people would drive by and go, "Who was that?" You know, things like that. And
would they have the devil too?
He would come you know, as we got older, we'd scheme about how we could, you know, do something. It was always somebody we knew, and the voices would sound somewhat familiar, but still, it was just too awesome to, you know, for us to ever realize what was going on.
Now, was this in Waitsfield, or was it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right here. Well, we moved here in 59, mm-hmm. And, you know, some of my brothers or sisters and I, you know, we would spend Christmases or periods of time for schooling or whatever elsewhere, but basically there were always, you know, people there, enough people, and it wasn't just us. We always had summer, either cousins or friends, children of friends of my parents who would stay the whole summer and things like that. So there were always people living there, some year-round, went to the school system here. that kind of thing. So it wasn't just us. It wasn't. So there was definitely
extended family
and friends. So it was definitely known to us that was the it was a cultural thing. There was definitely that impression there. And but as when we were younger, I mean, we would experience that in Stowe as well, with all my aunts and uncles and everything. And because it's so Germanic, and my mother prefers speaking German anyway, so that a lot of that was in German too.
Yeah,
you know,
I was
all
gonna
of
ask
the Christmas carols, all the cakes and cookies and everything were all German names and things like that. And so it was very authentic. I mean, my mother was a very, you know, she was a stickler on how it was done. And, well, let's see, Easter was the same thing. It was the Easter Bunny, but it really was around hunting, you know, an Easter egg hunt. I mean, just the classic thing that's still going on in Austria. I mean, I would recognize it. There were a few things that might have been different, but I think that would vary over there too. So it wasn't anything. I mean, for example, Christmas was the Christmas room was just no one was allowed in there, you know, which is very different from you know, the American thing. You know, as a kid, you came in and there were no electric lights, they were all candles. And you came in and there was this, you know, tree just and all the presents around. Most of the time they weren't wrapped, or very few were wrapped. Some were wrapped, but very few. It was just, they were laid out is what it was like. And so you didn't know what was going on until, I mean, you knew something was going on, but it was something that just that night, it was a big dinner,
and
it was evening, the 24th,
yeah,
rather than Christmas Day or Christmas morning. I'm trying to get them to understand that it's very different all over the world, and that and basically in the Christian areas that it's celebrated, but it's celebrated in different ways. And I don't know, I guess I have a real, having been brought up that way, it's not that we didn't get lots of presents and everything, but the commercialism was just not part of it. As a kid, you didn't go shopping, you didn't buy things to decorate a tree. That wasn't the focus. It was very different, and I'm trying to impart whatever I can, you know, to the kids in that respect. And it's.
Would you make your own ornaments?
Well, no, we weren't at all involved in that. That was all done by the parents in that room. They would make a lot of the ornaments. I mean, my mother had the candle holders from Europe. You know, she used to go to Europe to spend time with her mother. You know, a couple months in the summer, let's say, or whenever it was a good time. Something, you know, she was ailing in later years, so it was pretty much when she was needed over there. But she would bring all these things back. I mean, they were all straight from, you know, Salzburg or wherever. And so there were candles with the, you know, the clip-on holders, and one of the things they'd use is would be various colored tissue with sort of gilded string, and there'd be candies inside there, and you know, you weren't allowed to eat them for a while, but they would be covered with that, and then some wax ornaments, things like that. But there was no plastic and things like that. I mean, you know, an angel on the top of the tree, but that was it. You know, that was a, you know, there. Candles on a tree are, it's definitely a different.
My grandmother always.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone would be aghast. You know, they think.
I know it.
Think you're gonna burn the house down, but.
And then your aunts and so forth would, or mother would make different cookies.
Oh my gosh, it was just an endless. I mean, it just smelled like a bakery there for, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before, and you know, you'd eat cookies right into January. I mean, it was just.
And were there particularly special cookies for that?
Well, she see my great grandmother, my mother's mother, ran a. She was a tremendous cook, a well known cook, and she was a widow. She ran a Gasthaus in Salzburg, a really well-known, I mean, she ran it single-handed. I don't know how she did it, but I mean, she was a very dynamic person. And, of course, her daughter learned a lot of cooking from her, but never liked it. And my mother was, you know, by most standards, a good cook. She's a good cook. But my grandmother always said, you never took on cooking like you should have, you know. So it was there was a progression or a degression, whatever, in their eyes anyway. And but there were certain recipes that had been passed down. So, and there's some just well-known, you just say the name and any Austrian would know what you're talking about. But there were at least, there had to be 10 to 15 different kinds of cookies. And then the tortas, you know, all kinds of those, everything, you know, imaginable. And they were all authentic, too, because she would get the essential ingredients sent or go get them herself to make these things. So.
Does your sister do any of this?
One of them does. Yeah. She went to school in Salzburg and lived with my grandmother. Yeah, she... You know, everything in fact, the school itself was a designer and, I'm not sure, it's not a tailor school. And that was one of the big things. And she studied, or seamstress, I guess you would call it. She studied that among all the other curriculum, but that's what they specialized in. And she ended up doing pretty well and made some replicas for a museum in London. You know, she was so, it just came naturally to her.
Does she live there now? Or?
No, she lives right here in Waitsfield.
Oh, she does?
Yeah, but she does have a shop where she does a lot of the work for the lodge, which, you know, a lot of the people up there still, they wear, Diendeln, okay, yeah. The waitresses and the bus boys or whatever, the bartenders and all, they wear something similar, vests and shirts and whatever. So she makes all their outfits for them. So she and my mother is a very good seamstress, and she always wore the traditional dress. She always has. She now I think she wears more. She. Part of the time she wears whatever, I mean, what you would call it, just not American necessarily, but not the traditional dress.
Mm-hmm.
She knows a lot about it too, my mother does. She used to model, and so she has some ancient, the ones she pulled out some things that are just really ornate things that were only worn for occasions, you know. So they had different levels of dress too that she was familiar with and used occasionally. But
let me back up a sec because I've got to sort of wed all this together. The family as a singing group broke up in 56, and then people moved to separate places, and I guess a core stayed in Stowe.
Well, the reason that the many stayed there was because that became their home base.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think even before 56, there were one or two or maybe three members who had either married or or stopped singing. But the main group, and there were always other friends who would come.
Mm-hmm.
See, because their touring was usually 8, maybe 10 months of the year.
Gosh.
And then they would recuperate. And so that was their home base. And my grandfather died there in the house in 48. They were based in Stowe, yeah, and the difficulty there for all the members was the basic premise that everyone contributes and everyone benefits in the place, so to speak. It was a very nebulous kind of an idea, and it was very difficult for anyone to either start a family or, and particularly while they were still singing, and at that point too, things were, when they bought the place, it was just a totally run-down Vermont farm. So until that was done, and I think also my grandmother, her step-grandmother, had some fairly bizarre ideas, and I don't think financially she had things could have progressed to a certain stage a lot quicker than they did, in order for people to have from that point on some sort of freedom or whatever. So it's still though their home base, and
did your father, did he sing or did he?
My father was one of the members of the singing, you know, the group. And then in 56, we still, I'm trying to think, I remember living up there in one of the farmhouses. There were three different farmhouses as a family. And I think my youngest brother was born at that time. And that was probably 57, 58, and then 59, we moved here to the Mad River Valley.
And then, I think you told me that your father bought a farm, and that was sort of, although he wasn't really a farmer, that was the most comfortable.
That was something that he and my mother decided would be a good framework to raise a family, you know, because I had five siblings, and they needed some sort of, you know, a rock to stand on of their own, and that was really what I think prompted them to come down here and do this. And I think it was another similar move for my father in that, you know, striking out on his own. I knew he wanted to do it. I think it was with some intrepidation that he did that. But it was a difficult time, I know, for them. But they managed, and you know, it worked out for them.
Did the singing or the music continue in your family?
Well, I think more. There were some hard feelings, I think, because the family situation in Stowe had lasted that long. But I think what really it wasn't so much the music, but the family itself. That, you know, people, there were annual huge reunions, which.
Yeah.
Which, where everyone would again see each other. And that was the nice part. I mean, I remember that really well. And because we lived geographically so close, every holiday we would have, formal dinners or whatever. at the lodge, and friends, you know, you name it. I mean, anyone who was around or happened to be there, and we knew, we grew up knowing a lot. I think because we were so close, I think, and I was always pretty grateful for my father in deciding that, just not taking off to some, you know, far off corner somewhere. I mean, this was in 59 was as remote as you would need anyway, but that we were able to, in a half or an hour, 45 minutes in those days, it was a little more in the winter, let's say, but in a drive, you could go up there for the day and see whoever was there and get together and visit and you know, we had a blast as kids, you know, doing whatever.
And you all were fluent in, I suppose, the
Swiss language. No, it's Austrian. Austrian. Yeah, I would say Austrian. I mean, it is German, originated in Vienna, from what I understand. And the Austrians, just like Vermont, have, you know, a 10-minute bike ride, and you can be in another dialect, which is, you know, for me, it would take me, you know, half a day to really start understanding someone. And but we my mother spoke to us, we all, that was our mother tongue, German was, because in those, in at that time when we were really young, you know, our aunts would babysit for us, things like that, and a lot of their friends spoke German, and it was, I think I remember my older brother and sister saying when they first went to school, they can remember going to school and not understanding a word of English, and just having to cope with that. And, you know, kids are resilient, but I think that wasn't the easiest thing in the world to them. I can remember Martin telling me, just saying, you know, I didn't understand anything for days. And then I think we, the younger ones, began learning English from not only my father was, you know, he was very fluent in English anyway, but he spoke with my mother and he spoke at home, but through my father, from my father and my older brother and sister, that I began learning English. So it wasn't, I don't recall that in school having that problem at all, that I didn't know English. And, but my mother still speaks to us in German, and we reply in English.
How about your kids?
They know very little. They know very little. I think they've heard enough that they could pick it up easily. I'm certain. I'm sure I think my second child, Gardner, probably could pick it up pretty easily. He just remembers things. That's the most important thing. But I remember a lot of the music and prayers and things like that were all in German, and that would be a Salzburger dialect, which you know, people in Austria can target you immediately. It's in Vermont, it's a little more difficult. In the United States, if you are from the South, you know, somebody can pinpoint the South, the West, probably the Midwest, and New England, certainly. But in Austria, it's like that as well. But there's I spent a year there in 73, and everyone they would never know where I was from. They would say, you're from so-and-so, you know, you're from Vienna, or you're from, not Vienna necessarily, but they would always guess some other region that I was from. And I love to imitate dialects anyway. You know, I don't know, I just, you know, my parents were very aware of dialects and things like that, and it was kind of a funny thing to do, you know, to imitate. And I guess I do it with Vermont accents too.
No, I mean, I was thinking as you were talking, I mean, you can hear right across Vermont and north and south, you can hear all the different dialects.
Yeah. Well, the German itself was, I think, the German that I know, if I were to go to Austria now, I think people would kind of look a little perplexed because some of the vocabulary would date back. I mean, my mother told me that happened to her when they spent some time there, that at times they, some of their German is outdated, it's archaic.
They don't keep up with the current slang, I guess.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't even be so much slang as just words that just aren't used anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm not fluent. I shouldn't say I'm fluent. I can certainly get along easily. You know, I spent some time in Burgenland, which they have their own dialect, and I immediately pick it up. I mean, I just start talking like they do, and I don't think my vocabulary is, you know, if I were to read a legal document, I would be lost. But I used to read the paper quite a bit, and
well, you're comfortable in it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it took a little while for the rust to wear off, and you know, I think as a kid we always grew up resenting the fact that we had to speak German to her, or even listen to it at times, you know. But it's pretty normal, I think.
Well, one of the themes that we're getting, you know, talking with families is either the grandfather, once he learned English, wouldn't talk it anymore because he wanted his family to be American.
Yeah.
Or the attempt to keep it up and the children resenting because it made them different.
Yeah. I think I have a feeling, and I think one thing, you know, my family had to do is because it wasn't just English they were exposed to, but the multicultural, you know, worldwide, they just had a different approach. And I remember that really well. I mean, I remember, I didn't know a thing about racism, okay, or that kind of bigotry that you felt from even some of the native people here. That just wasn't the case. And there was, I don't know, I just felt a real high level of respect for any kind of culture. And I mean, you know, growing up, it was just a parade. And I don't know, I just really, that meant a lot. I realized, you know, later on as I got older, you know, how important that is for, you know, people to understand other peoples and cultures and things like that. And I don't know, I always embraced that diversity, and it always seemed on a really positive level. You know, it was never, at least in Stowe, it wasn't in any kind of a antagonistic situation. So it was a real learning experience. It was.
Did you feel American or Austrian or what? Vermonter?
Oh, certainly a Vermonter. Certainly a Vermonter. I mean, knowing somehow in Vermont. Well, it's an interesting question that you say that because. Before you had said the theme that runs through is that people were trying to Americanize, and I think I'm sure there was some of that involved. But you know, my family was so large, and this multicultural exposure, I don't think there was any striving to be one thing. It was more of a open your eyes and learn attitude. That's what I came you know, away thinking. And I've always felt very, very much tied to Vermont, and I think that progressed into later years where, well, even from, it's the same thing today that people come here for, you know, the pristine or the environment or just the political aspect of Vermont that people have really tried to have and have tried to treat this place as a special place, not in the sense of it being necessarily better than anywhere else, but just the values that people have and those things. I just my parents settled here for that reason, the geography and what it was, and I don't know, that just rubbed off. And politically I feel the same way now. In fact, I'm probably pretty adamant about it, and I'm kind of a conservationist, and if, you know, more than anything. For that, I just remember, you know, having grown up here in '59. I mean, in this valley, it's really, really reluctant to see that disappear, because I feel most people.